All right, this is I Hate the Finns. I think this is our seventh episode under the SB Nation umbrella. We're part of the Finnsider Radio podcast. I forgot to mention that the past couple of weeks, so there it is. We're happy to be a part of it. If you're able to catch the other programs on there, definitely check them out. I think it's every couple of days. We're supposed to be on Thursdays. We're recording on Thursday this week, just because the schedule I've got going right now is tumultuous at best. Just, you know, having a baby with a busy time at work. But we do get these programs out eventually. We're doing Saturdays right now, which I guess is in a way appropriate because we focus a lot on the college game on this program. With Finnsider Radio, you get the actual team. We talk about who could be part of the team, guys you want to see part of the team as something of interest in a season like this where really not a lot has gone right. My name is Keith, of course, with my co-host, Zach. Most, if not all of you, saw the game on Sunday. It's a game Miami should have won. It's a game Miami had to win. Eventually, they come up short. A lot of conservative play calling at the end. That has been a theme this season, the conservative play calling. It's understandable to have conservative play calling when you have someone like Brock Osweiler under center. It's different when you have someone like Ryan Tannehill, who normally, if he were healthy, you like to think that you're going to unleash him in a game like that, especially late when the Dolphins had a chance to move the chains, keep Andrew Luck off the field, and win a tough road game against a team that really has been surging for the past few weeks and has looked very good. Ryan Tannehill is clearly nowhere near healthy. I think it's the AC sprain. I mean, that is a tough injury in your throwing shoulder. He's definitely missing some velocity. It looked better than the last time we saw him, but that's not really saying much. Struggled to throw the ball downfield. Had a couple of chances to hit downfield on throws he usually makes, and it just wasn't there. So, if you're looking for the positives in that game, before we start to look at some of the themes, and then we'll go ahead and we'll talk about this weekend's bowl games a little bit. And we'll tease a few things that we have coming up. If you're looking for some positives, and I'll turn to Zach in a second, because I want to make this more of a discussion. That's the Kenyon Drake you're looking for. That's why people want to see him get more touches. He looked unstoppable at times in that game. Looked good, looked fast, looked good catching the ball, was just an absolute game breaker and a great compliment, which we expected a great compliment to Frank Gore. Frank Gore is just an absolute bull in the backfield. I mean, Kenyon is savvy, very fast, very fluid, just a great counterpunch to what Frank Gore brings to the table. So, I mean, that was nice to see. And then Xavien Howard. And I think probably one of the great crimes of the 2018 season for Miami is they're just wasting away just unbelievable play from a guy who is playing corner as well as anybody in the league right now. I mean, Xavien Howard just looks unbelievable. Just looks like, he's just a shutdown corner at this point. I mean, I don't know. You can throw any kind of hyperbole or superlatives out there for him. It doesn't really matter. He's playing as well as anyone. I mean, he is a legitimate superstar out on the perimeter for a team that has been looking for something like that forever. So, I mean, that's a great spot of the season, a real high point. Unfortunately, with some of the play from the defensive line, I mean, has struggled at times. They got some stuff going in Indianapolis. So, I mean, you can't really beat them up too much. And then the linebacker core has been up and down. Sometimes Kiko looks really good. I mean, sometimes Kiko struggles. You see him, he's guessing wrong. He's lunging. Raekwon McMillan has been a project. Jerome Baker has been a pleasant surprise, albeit somebody who's a rookie. So lots of some stuff to like, a lot to dislike. So, Zach, I'll bring you in now. And for the positive Dolphins fans out there, we talked about a little bit of this on Sunday night, but your biggest takeaway from a positive standpoint from that game, where you even though the Dolphins blow a lead up, they're up 10 points in the fourth quarter, I think, And then lost it in typical Dolphins fashion, if we're just being honest. The big takeaway in a positive sense that you can tell fans, like, look, that happened, and that's something to be excited about going forward.
It's kind of a tough one for me because, like I said, I was on the commute back to Baltimore from Jersey, so I listened to it on radio, which is always interesting. But I think you kind of hit it with Gore and Kenyon Drake, and I think it's not so much the individual pieces of the two of them and how they shine in their own individual ways with their skill set. I think it's more that you saw that this offense has the capability to successfully run two running backs with two different skill sets. It seemed like through a lot of the season, we've seen that Frank Gore has a good game or Kenyon Drake has a good game, not both of them at the same time. So I think regardless of who the quarterback is, I think more success from both of them as a team, instead of one or the other having a good week, you know, can really set whoever's back there at quarterback up for a lot of success.
I would agree with that. And I mean, we talked about a quarterback draft talk, which, I mean, it just has permeated Dolphins Twitter. I mean, really since Ryan, well, really since the start of the season.
Since 2012.
Since before that. I mean, I think the big problem with, or I guess like the tragedy of going into a draft where it, I feel like it's almost an absolute lock, no pun intended, that the Dolphins, I think, are going to take a quarterback, especially if they retain Adam Gase, and I think they will, unless something really messed up happens in the next couple of weeks, he's going to be back. And we've mentioned this before, and a lot of times during a coach's tenure or stay with a team, the quarterback situation from his perspective goes from guy I think I can win with or guy I believe I can win with to pursuing the guy that I want to coach if my job is on the line, which I think we've kind of transitioned into that phase in some way, shape, or form. And people can, I mean, hot seat is such an overused term when it comes to really any potential coaching vacancy or coaching situation. I think Adam Gase will be back, and I think that at this point it turns into find me the guy who's going to go ahead and right this ship in terms of what I'm looking to do on offense, so I can save face, so I can go ahead and reassume the good standing I had with the team, ownership, fans, so on and so forth. So in a season where that's probably going to happen, this is an excellent defensive draft. And watching that game on Sunday, you think like, oh man, it would be so great if they had, you know, had some more punch up the middle in terms of just like an outstanding defensive tackle. Because I mean, that team against the run has been extremely hit or miss. You think about, I mean, do you want to go with Minkah Fitzpatrick as your perimeter guy going forward, or do you really want to stay the course and look at him as, you know, almost the role he played at Alabama, which was that star role, but instead of, you know, toggling between that nickel linebacker / safety thing, are you going to put him primarily at safety, bring him sometimes down into the slot, depending on what's going on? So that's the sad part in there. And I mean, we're going to talk about quarterback play so often on this show that, I mean, some people are going to love it. Some people are not going to like it. So we're going to try to break it down into bite-sized pieces every week just to kind of say like, hey, check this guy out. This is going to come up a lot just because, you know, we're going into bowl season. This Saturday is one of my favorite weekends of college football. I love Championship Saturday, especially because, I mean, the game starts at what, Oklahoma and Texas starts at 11. I mean, and it's just like almost 12 hours of just football overdose. So
I think more importantly, at noon is Iowa State versus Drake. I think that's probably the most important game this weekend.
Yeah, of course. How could we forget that one? And I saw that one when I was rolling through the games, just because I forgot who Clemson was playing in the ACC title game. It was something where I was like, what am I missing here? And then it was a thing where it started to come to me and I was like, I think it's Pitt. And then I rolled through and I was just going through the games and I saw Iowa State and Drake. And I was like, ah, yes, they're the real heavyweight of the bunch. But I mean, Iowa State typically produces some players that we really like too. I mean, we loved Alan Lazard last year.
I still do. It's a shame that the NFL hasn't figured out how to have more, what's his name? Colston, that played for the Saints forever.
Marcus Colston.
Yeah. Yeah. Like those are guys that you can use, and not every team has a tight end that makes sense to move into the slot and stuff. So like have a big wide receiver, make him your fifth wide receiver or sixth wide receiver on your team that you just have in certain packages. But you know, what do I know? But I mean, Iowa State has some pretty good guys. I'm going to have to do a quick Google search. They have a corner who's actually really good. He's played really well this year. And their freshman quarterback, Purdy, he's played really well too, which is nice.
It's always a school that's good for ruining someone's season every year. Like they'll beat someone. You think about they knocked Oklahoma State out of the title game mention. I want to say that was 2011. I think they beat them on one of the last weekends of the season. So that was rough.
Peavy. Brian Peavy is the corner I'm thinking of Iowa State. He's scrappy. I like him.
And I think they were the first school to beat West Virginia this year. Back when that was considered a difficult thing to do.
Yep.
So. I mean, we're going to get into so many prospects and everything, but if just real quick before we talk about Championship Saturday and some what we'd like to see in some of these bowl games and how we can go ahead and project what's going on in these games onto the Dolphins' future. You agree that Adam Gase is safe this season. You expect him to be back next year, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Do you think he'll retain? I'm just going to just fire a bunch of questions at you. Just go ahead. You can answer as, you know, your answers can be as long or as short as you want.
Okay.
Do you expect a change at defensive coordinator?
Probably. I don't know who it would be. But I think there's just been too many big mistakes over the course of the season. And I think we kind of had this talk offline about how I think Matt Burke could run a good system. I think he could, you know, be a good coach to teach the fundamentals and things that he wants his defense to do. But I think he lacks focus in a way that projects onto the players where they lack focus. And that's why you're seeing those big, you know, chunk kind of gap plays. He's a young dude too. Like you got to give these young coaches some credit.
Yeah. You expect Adam Gase to retain play calling duties next season?
Again, I think, yeah, because who else is going to do it? Who else are you going to bring in? I don't think Loggins has done anything wrong to not, you know, stay the OC. And like, I don't think he's a play caller. I think he's a Joe Philbin kind of guy. I think he's more like a quality control kind of guy. And it
looks the PowerPoint.
Like, yeah, exactly. But it also looks like Cliff Kingsbury is going to USC.
USC.
Weird. That's definitely a rent to hire situation for them. Because that's putting Clay on notice that if you don't get your behind together in a year and a half, we got your replacement, you know, calling plays already.
Is football, everything moves so fast in football in terms of the world and the structure. Because remember at one point T. Martin was like considered like one of the offensive coordinators in college football. Like he was one of the guys. And all of a sudden, I mean, he's gone. So.
Yeah, I mean, that happens to a lot of guys. I mean, even look in the NFL, remember all the talk around, what's his name in Detroit, Jim Bob Cooter or whatever? He was a hot name for a second, which, you know, that's good, but it's over essentially for him.
Yeah, well, that's been a tough year for those guys. And I mean, they have a high priced offensive line that really, for all intents and purposes, has played well when it's healthy. I mean, Ricky Wagner's struggled to stay healthy. Taylor Decker's had some issues. TJ Lang has had issues. They drafted a Ragnow from Arkansas. So, yeah, I don't know. Everything moves so fast. So I agree with everything you've said thus far. All right, I'm just going to throw some other things out there. Do you think Ryan Tannehill is the starter in 2019?
That's a tough one. I think if the budget allows it, yes. If they think they need some wiggle room in their budget to make things happen in the off season or something, I say no. But I'll lean more towards yes.
Is Minka Fitzpatrick defending out on the perimeter when the season starts next year, or is he back to the original plan for him?
No, I think he's back to that star role that you were talking about. It's just tough because, like, I remembered going back to the draft, he prefers corner. That's where he feels most comfortable, he was saying. So while I'm not opposed to it, I don't think that's where he ends up because he's too talented to just be a boundary corner.
Is this the linebacker group that the team's going to go into the next season with, meaning Jerome, Kiko, and Raekwon?
You know, that's an interesting question, because when you were talking about kind of going over the outlook of the team in the beginning here, the weirdest part is, in my mind, the odd man out is still Kiko. Even though he's played really well this year, I just don't see him in the long-term plans for what he could potentially cost. And while he's had a really good year this year, there are still times where you just see him like, Kiko, what are you doing? You know, so my ideal scenario is if they could get a guy like Devin White out of LSU, plug him in the middle, put Raekwon as their left side two down linebacker, and have White and Baker as your nickel guys, I'm all about that.
Maybe a lot of speed. Plus, he could ride his horse around.
Yeah, I mean, he rode the heck out of that horse today. I don't know what that was for or what that was about, but I was a big fan.
Yeah. Okay, so, well, this is our last question. My last question, just because I don't want to... people have spent all week. I get it. It was a tough loss. Although I will say that if you've been a Dolphins fan for more than less than five years, that's the only explanation for why you went halfway through that fourth quarter thinking that team was actually going to win. I know it's very cynical to say, but as soon as they were up 10, then Indianapolis got that field goal and it's a 7-point game, and then the Dolphins immediately go 3-and-out, I knew that game was over.
But I mean, like,
that's just what
I'll take that kind of a loss compared to some of the losses we've seen over the past, you know, 5, 6, 7, whatever years. Like, at least they put in a pretty good effort. They just didn't execute all the way down the stretch, slash there was some conservative play calling. You know, at the end of the
day,
close. Yeah. You know? Yeah. No. I mean, like, but, you know, I'd rather take a loss like that than, like, were we ever actually in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you're not wrong, but just looking at this team's makeup and everything, that was such a Dolphins loss in terms of they're looking good, go up 10. I mean, Drake is just absolutely humming at that point. As soon as that game started, and Ryan Tannehill's velocity looked better, but it's still, I feel like it trailed off quick. Going into that second quarter, some of those throws he was making, I was like, I don't know about this. The good news, and one thing we didn't mention, is Leonte Carew sighting. He scores in that game. A pretty big play, too, if we're being honest.
Yeah, I mean, so. It was nice to see some life out of him. It'll be interesting going down the stretch to see what he and Ford can do. Because, you know, who knows who's going to be the bodies on the receiver core next year.
What do you make of what Kenny Stills said today?
I think that's just frustration, which is fair. I mean, like, even in our daily job, there's times where you're talking to people and you're like, you know, I'm doing everything I can, but X person isn't holding up their end of the bargain, which, like, that's how life works, unfortunately. And it can be frustrating at the moment. And sometimes you, because I think he trailed back around and said, like, look, like, I'm not pointing fingers or blaming anybody. Like that's just the scenario of what it is. Like, I'm open at times and I'm not getting the ball. But that's just how it is. So I think he was just flustered, which is 100% fair. But I mean, like, most of it has been 5 weeks of Brock Osweiler. He was on a good track while Tannehill was around, but obviously it fell off after that. But you know, I don't make anything of it. I retweeted when he said, I can't throw the ball to myself. I said, well, not with that attitude. But like at the end of the day, like, it's just frustration at work. And I think it's okay.
I interpret it as, I mean, he's doing everything he can. He's getting open, you know, he's busting his ass and everything. And I mean, he's just not seeing the results. But the one thing you point out is, I mean, the accumulation of whatever resulted in that sort of mini outburst was a lot of it was Brock Osweiler, which is a fair thing to note going forward. I mean, how many games has he had with a healthy Ryan Tannehill this year? Very few. And then another thing, he Stills was the target on that ball that was thrown to the corner of the end zone on Sunday that was should have been picked by Indianapolis, I think. It's been a long week. I'm trying to remember. I feel like he was the target on that play. So, I mean, I think a lot of it is the shoulder health of Ryan Tannehill. He's just not throwing the ball the way we're accustomed to seeing from him. The stats suggest as much. A lot of short stuff the other day. I think it's difficult for him to really put the ball downfield comfortably and consistently. So, and I don't know that that's going to get any better, which is bad news if you think this team is still in the hunt, which, I mean, they're doing some really good things well. And unfortunately, it's just the problems that they have are greatly overshadowing the pluses that they have going on both sides of the football. So there's one more question that I wanted to ask before we move on there. We got the Kenny Stills thing. Wanted to mention that. I mean, it is Buffalo, Bills week and everything. The thing is Josh Allen's playing fairly well, which is, I mean, kind of a thing to be salty about if you're the Dolphins, just because, I mean, you banked on that guy. I mean, so many fans thought that guy was going to be absolute trash. And I mean, like, he's not dominating. I thought he was really good in that game that they won in Minnesota, that real surprise where they just absolutely beat down the Vikings early in the season. And I mean, it's if you're playing Jacksonville's not very good right now. But I mean, he looked good. When I watch Josh Allen play right now, he's commanding the offense, which I don't know that you can really ask more of a rookie quarterback than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably, I mean, the second best quarterback in this draft class through, you know, what are we talking, 12 weeks here, you know, after Baker. And I mean, you know, it's kind of funny that him and Lamar are probably 2A, 2B, or 2 and 3 so far, but they've obviously had a smaller sample size than the other three guys. And Josh Rosen does not have a damn thing to work with in Arizona. And you can pretty much say the same thing for Sam Darnold in New York, not too many weapons, and whoever has been a weapon for them has been pretty beat up. But neither of those teams have offensive lines. So this will be a tough class to truly evaluate until these teams actually build things. But Josh Allen's looked good. I'm surprised how much he's used his legs. Because, like, you know, he was sold as that pretty athletic guy. And got that Cam Newton comp every now and then. But, like, I did not see the leg situation. And I don't think he ran, like, a crazy good 40. Maybe I forgot. But I'm just surprised he's, you know, run so well. And I think it's kind of complimented how little he's needed to put up huge life-saving throws. And especially because, like, I don't think the Bills have been running the ball that well this year. Obviously, they don't have a great offensive line, but I don't think McCoy has done anything, right?
I don't think so. So, no. Just something to note as this team goes through, because at one point it looked like those two games against Buffalo were going to be locks. or anything but now, especially considering the injury history we have going on here. So we'll turn our attention, because I want to try to keep this show to a half hour this week. We've got the games on Saturday. So I'll bring up each one. Maybe mention a prospect or two that you like, maybe playing for Miami next year. Just, I mean, because, I mean, a lot of, I find that either the people who follow me on Twitter are really into the University of Miami, or they just kind of dabble in college football and just watch whatever's in front of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, I prefer the latter. No offense to the Canes fans listening. I am not a Canes fan. I don't know if I could make that any more clear with what I tweet and what I talk about on this show. But so let's start. So Oklahoma, Texas, that one kicks it off. A lot of people are, I've noticed that people are starting to try to suck themselves in terms of Kyler Murray.
Yeah, his plan is still to go play baseball, so I don't think he is even a possibility.
I mean, he was drafted, I mean, for people who don't know, if you're just now finding out about Kyler Murray, he's drafted in the top 10.
Yeah.
In the Major League Baseball draft in June, Oakland selected him. Oklahoma fans were pissed when that happened, because I think he can go ahead with that contract after this season, if I'm not mistaken.
That's the game plan. He's going to dip for baseball like ASAP after this season's over.
So, I mean, you talk about a life after football as opposed to a life after baseball. I mean, we've had that discussion plenty. You were a big Jeff Samardzija fan when you were
a kid,
right?
Loved Jeff Samardzija. I have a Jeff Samardzija jersey back in New Jersey.
He that dude was amazing for that. I mean, and honestly, if you're looking back on it, really propped up Brady Quinn a little bit, I think. I mean,
no for
him.
Sure.
But so Jeff Samardzija had the same thing going on, where Jeff Samardzija was not a really fast receiver. And you know what, he's what, about 6'4", 6'5", somewhere in that range?
Yeah, probably closer to 6'3", 6'4", but same thing.
All right. I think he was listed at 6'5" at Notre Dame, but you know, I'm sure they're pumping that one up a little bit. But anyway, just not a terribly fast guy. I can't even guess what he would have done in the 40, but there are times at Notre Dame when he had two or three guys defending him and he just could defeat those double and triple teams. It wasn't a problem for him. Just great hands, really good route runner, really good after the catch for some reason, which go figure for a guy who's really lacking some of the elite tools that you look for in a wide receiver with what they do yards after catch. He did the same thing, though, because he got drafted by the Chicago Cubs and went and played baseball. And a lot of fans were disappointed about that. A lot of Dolphins fans, because they were looking for receivers at the time. Obviously, we drafted Ted Ginn Jr. that spring. But just to put in perspective, I mean, this has happened before to prospects who probably would have gone in the first round. And I mean, Kyler Murray, they claim he's 5'11". I've heard that he's maybe 5'9".
Yeah.
So, I mean, Russell Wilson is just under 5'11". And I'm not a big fan of using height as the number one, you know, measuring tool, no pun intended, for judging a quarterback, which I feel a lot of people do. I remember right around the time we took Ryan Tannehill, the big discussion out there was you don't want to take a quarterback who's under 6'2". And I mean, right now, I mean, you see Baker's what, 6'5"?
Yeah,
somewhere around there
easily.
Russell Wilson's, as we mentioned, 5'10" and 7/8" or 3/4" or whatever. But there's more to it than that. I mean, you're seeing now, it seems like guys are a little more okay with quarterbacks who are 6 foot, 6'1". Drew Brees is 6 foot. All those quarterbacks who came out in that 2017 class, Mitchell Trubisky is 6'2". Patrick Mahomes is 6'2". Deshaun Watson is 6'2". Then we mentioned Baker as well. And then, I mean, the other guys who were drafted last year were bigger dudes. Josh Allen, 6'5". Sam Darnold, 6'3". I think Rosen, 6'4". So, I mean, you'll see a lot of it, but it's not the be-all, end-all of whether a guy's going to be a successful quarterback. I remember when Robert Griffin was coming into the league and he went to the combine and all people wanted to know was whether he was going to be 6'2" or shorter. That's like, I mean, and he was 6'2", I think he was like 6'2 1/4", and people are like, oh, okay, no, we're good with it. It's like, was that really going to make that much of a difference? It's a half inch going to determine whether this guy can play in the NFL or not.
The offenses have changed too, where it's not like you're not coming out of an offset eye and running play action, you know, on first down every drive and stuff like that. Like, they're a lot more wide open and they're out of the shotgun more often. Like, they're catching up to that college game and going that way instead of the college game coming to us. So at the end of the day, like,
for sure,
you don't need to be 6'5" anymore, because like, you don't need to turn around, bury your head on the fake, come back up, set your steps, and then find your reads. Like, half the time now you run a play action like that, they're moving the line and they're getting you out of the pocket in the first place. So the game's totally changed. So yeah, the height thing's starting to go out the window, which is nice.
Yeah, it always really bothered me. So, and we got a little bit away from this conversation, but so we've got Oklahoma, and that's okay. Tangents are good. So if you're looking at Oklahoma and Texas, great rematch from a game earlier this year that Texas won. You want to throw a guy out there, someone the Dolphins fans should maybe keep an eye on, some guy who could very well be wearing aqua and orange in the spring.
So Texas has a bunch of no-namers that are just pretty solid players, but that's kind of been the case for a couple seasons now just because of how they've played, but now they have a record to kind of match it. One dude that the Dolphins may look at on, let's say two dudes from Texas that they may look at are that one defensive end, Brecken Hager, the dude with the long blonde hair. He's a guy that you can probably grab day three, fourth or fifth round, because they just need defensive end depth at this point. There's a big question on who will be back next year because of age and injury and all that sort of stuff. So that's a tough one. And then there's they have a corner whose name is Chris Boyd. He's got some height to him. He's a pretty good player. I think he's probably teetering on that 6'1", 6', he may even come in 5'11" and change, but he's been pretty physical and good for them overall. And there's a couple more guys on that defense that might make sense. And the one guy that I need to put a little more time in with on Oklahoma, that's played really well this year is he's a right guard, Drew Samia or something like that. He's played pretty well this year from what I've seen. I haven't had a chance to go back and watch like the snap by snap plays of him and the technique and stuff. But I mean, like, the Dolphins need interior linemen like nobody's business. So he makes sense. The other player on Texas, circling back here quick, is Colin Johnson too. That their receiver he's listed at 6'6". He'll probably come in 6'5", 220-ish. So if they decide to part ways with DVP, and that's not going to happen anymore, and since Gasecki hasn't come out and kind of blown the doors off everyone, you might get another jump ball, kind of 50-50 red zone option in there.
Two things real quick. Do you think the hate toward Gasecki is overblown right now, and do you think it's something that eventually
100%
works itself out?
It's way too early. Tight ends always struggle. The only time you see a rookie tight end not struggle is when you have a team like Philly that has Dallas Goedert, where like Goddard's catching touchdowns because they're way more worried about Zach Ertz. I'm sorry, like, if you got two tight ends out there between Zach Ertz and a dude from South Dakota State or whatever, like, F it. I'll let this rookie South Dakota State guy score on us. So it's overblown. He's blocked well, which is the one thing that everybody said he couldn't do, like, at all. So I'm happy about that. I think he's done a nice job. But we'll see as he moves along here.
I think the future is bright with him. I think everyone needs to back off the ledge with that guy. Is this it for DVP in Miami?
Probably. If he had that fifth year option picked up, I'd say, keep him. But there's too many other guys at receiver this year that made plays when he didn't, and that were healthy when he wasn't. And there's too many cheaper options moving forward. So I think it's one of those things where it's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
All right, let's go to the SEC title game, which is at Bama and Georgia, rematch of last year's national championship. Much different look this year in that Bama's defense is as good as anything I've ever seen in terms of the defensive line. And that Georgia defense, which was so incredible a year ago, a lot of those dudes went to the NFL. You see guys like Lorenzo Carter, guys like Roquan Smith, they're all out of there. Still some key pieces in there, though. So you mentioned the defensive line. I have to admit, I have to figure, if you're interested in the Dolphins bolstering their defensive line next spring, Bama's a team you want to look at.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, the two big guys off the top for them are Quinnen Williams, who's had a crazy season as their nose tackle, but like he can play anything from five tech to five tech. Like he's probably one of those guys like Dexter Lawrence and Clemson that like, you want to put him at wide nine? F it, do it. He'll be fine. You know, so he's a guy. And then a guy that got a lot of hype that has kind of gotten the thunderstorm from him is Raekwon Davis, too. He reminds me a lot of the two Oregon guys, DeForest Buckner and Arik Armstead. Yeah, he reminds me a lot of those kind of guys. He's that 6'7", worst case scenario, 6'6", you know, 300, 305. I think at the end of the day, he ends up as a five tech somewhere. But he wouldn't be a bad, you know, shade kind of three guy, wide three, you know, like a four eye look every now and then in those wide nine kind of setups. But I think if they go defensive line, it's probably Quinnen Williams at that point.
Just a couple of questions, because I'm always interested to hear what people think, because Alabama puts these classes out there and then they go ahead in the NFL. And you always think that that guy's the best linebacker, the best safety, corner, or defensive lineman that Alabama has produced under Nick Saban. Up until this point, I thought that Jonathan Allen was probably the best defensive lineman I've seen under Nick Saban, with like Daron Payne right under him. Do you think Quinnen Williams is better than those two?
I think Quinnen Williams' ceiling is higher than those two. I don't know if he is the best of the three and or will be better than those two. But I think he's the first Alabama lineman that I would put in an order if you're talking about guys in the past, you know, 5 years or so off the defensive line and like who has the highest ceiling. Which sometimes for Bama guys, like Bama guys typically have like low floor or low ceiling, like high floor kind of deal. So it'll be interesting with him to see kind of how that shakes out. That's a tough one to answer though.
We were making a joke on Thanksgiving because Washington has all the top line guys like Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen, whereas Detroit always gets like the number two dude,
A'shaun.
Like A'shaun Robinson, Deshaun Hand, you know, guys
so
like that.
They'll end
so,
up with Isaiah Bugs too. Isaiah Bugs has been really good this year, and like because he's on the same interior as Quinn Williams and Raekwon Davis, like he just gets no love, but he's been a really solid senior in there.
Where does Mac rank in the linebackers that Nick Saban has produced?
I mean, if you're talking about how we pictured everyone as they were coming out, I'd say he's probably on the back end of that ranking there. You know, we all thought Mosley was really good coming out. He's been okay. But I'd say coming out, who was the most recent one again? Not Ragland. Reuben Foster. So like, I think Reuben Foster was probably the best out of them. He's also the craziest out of all of them. Like he makes Rolando McClain look like a sane person. And he...
Before Reuben Foster, I thought Rolando McClain was the most hyped linebacker that Nick Saban has produced. Because I remember in 2010, the hype behind Rolando McClain was just stupid huge. It was crazy.
Yeah, we were looking at like an Aaron Curry situation there, which that's a whole nother story. But yeah, so I think like if I had to rank him out from like where I would rank him, at least when I thought of what those Bama linebackers were coming out, I'd say it'd probably be Mosley or Foster, Mosley, Ragland, and Mack. I don't think he's Mack Wilson's not a bad player. I just don't think he's as dynamic. I think he's a dude that if you're a 43 team and you need a strong side linebacker, I think you put him in there, play him two downs, and never look behind. But it's nothing against him. He's just not as outstanding as the other guys.
So, I mean, and then I'll use this one last question about Alabama, and then we'll move on to the two other games, and then we'll call it. So as safety position's another one where we always hear a lot about the guys that Nick Saban produces. And this is a long list because, I mean, it starts with guys like Mark Barron, who's not even a safety in the NFL, really. I mean, I think the Rams use him as more of a like linebacker.
The Rams use him as like their Mike. Roaming Mike, essentially.
Which he was always such a big dude. And I remember when Tampa drafted him, and in his first game, he almost killed Steve Smith. And I remember seeing that. And I was like, oh, this is a big dude. So, I mean, he's on that list. Some guys who really weren't as impactful in the NFL as some thought. Some guys who have been really good. I mean, Clinton Dix has been a good player, recently traded. So the funny thing is, I don't remember a Bama safety getting more love in the NFL and just like an absolute wave behind him than what Eddie Jackson has going on.
Yeah,
right
now. That's because Eddie Jackson destroyed his knee that last year. So he was all but forgotten. I mean, the thing is a lot of the guys that have come out of Bama have been more strong safety-ish. And I think Minka kind of benefited from obviously his unique dual skill set, but like once Eddie Jackson came in and showed that, like, look, like I'm a Bama safety, but like I'm not going to just come down and knock your teeth out every time. Like people kind of had that idea of like, okay, like they produce more than just dudes that'll cover well in, you know, a sink kind of zone coverage and then come down and ruin your day in the run game. So, you know, I'm happy for Eddie Jackson that he was able to come back from that injury and tear it up.
Yeah, he's become an absolute star in Chicago. I mean, he's a favorite. The reason I bring up all these guys is, where does Deontay fit
in this
lineage, if you will?
So again, we'll play the game of what I was thinking of them as they were coming out, not what they are in the NFL now. I think out of the most recent ones, my top one was probably Collins. I really liked Landon Collins a lot. I thought he was the same thing, and he essentially is, as Rashad Jones, but he just showed it right away where Rashad Jones had to grow into it once he got into the league. So I think it was him. And then I think my next one was probably... It probably was Minka, even though I was a little bit lower on Minka than other people were. Then Haha, Barron, and then Eddie Jackson on the back end just because of the knee injury. But Deontay Thompson, I would probably slide him in right above Haha. I think him and Haha give you a lot of the same things. I just think with the way the college game has changed in the past few years, you have to be like crazy athletic to play a pretty true free safety role. So I think he's got better range and coverage ability. And I was actually going to propose this to you at some point too, where if Minka stays on the boundary and like the Dolphins end up picking in 13 to 17 or something stupid like that, like do you double down on Bama safeties and run Minka outside, Thompson in the back end, and then, you know, just play with that there? I think, at least in my opinion, the only way that happens is if Jones or Rashad, McDonald or Rashad Jones are out. And I think it'd have to be Rashad Jones at that point.
Yeah. I wouldn't say no to that scenario. I'm quite intrigued by it. I kind of like the idea of seeing what kind of upside Minka Fitzpatrick has out on the perimeter. There's no doubt that he can do it. It's just how long and at mm-hmm. what kind of level. Because, I mean, there's certain places he can be on the field where, I mean, he's an elite talent. I mean, he's definitely an elite mind. I mean, he's just self-driven. I mean, we've talked about him, I think, almost every week. I mean, he's outstanding. He's everything you want in a high first round pick in the secondary, in my opinion. And if not for the fact that Xavien Howard is just absolutely just stupid good right now, I think we'd be talking even more about Minka Fitzpatrick. So I wouldn't say no to that. I think that Bama defenders are a safer pick now more than ever. Whereas, I mean, we talked about, I mean, Mark Barron was considered like a super high floor, lowish to mid ceiling safety. And I mean, he did okay things in Tampa, but I mean, as we talked about, I mean, he's not even a safety right now. I mean, we talked about how Clinton Dix, Landon Collins has been really important. For like when New York went to the playoffs a couple of years ago, he was a big part of that defense. So especially with the three corners that they had in there, we talked about those guys a couple of weeks ago. So, I mean, Landon Collins has done really good things. Eddie Jackson, I mentioned, is just an absolute stud in Chicago right now, just finds the football. If people saw that pick six he had against the Lions on Thanksgiving, I mean, that it's not like that ball was just errantly thrown to him. I mean, like, he sniffed out that route and absolutely went in there and just took the ball away. I mean, and that's what elite defenders do, especially when they're coming from the back third of the defensive side of the football. So, I mean, that's big time stuff. So, I'm cool with Alabama defenders. I don't think it's not like the early days where, you know, hey, we really like this D. Milner guy, or, you know, a lot of people thought that Drake Kirkpatrick was just going to be this shutdown corner. And I think it really all unraveled first because he was listed as like 6'3 at Alabama. And it turns out that he's like maybe 6'1. So, I mean, which is still tall for a corner. But I mean, that is a big gap between those two heights. So I'm going to try to keep this moving a little bit because I'm not a Bama fan by any stretch. I actually despise that school, but I do appreciate the NFL talent they put out. And it is fun to project where those guys could play at the next level, especially with their defensive linemen. Their defensive linemen are just ready-made 3-4 players.
Before we switch games here, though, on the Georgia side of the ball, on defense, keep an eye on Jonathan Ledbetter. He's a dude that's just been really solid for them. He's never turned into the superstar that they were hoping he'd be. But he's a guy that could be a answer to replacing Will Hayes.
And I mean, we should talk about Baker as well, because I think that I don't know if anyone's combine is going to determine their stock more than
He comes in truly at 5'11 or if he comes in real high 5'10, I think there's a chance that he could go over Greedy Williams out of LSU based on who might be picking in the top end of the draft and what you're looking for. Like, if you are looking for a really good cover corner that does everything you ask him to do, you take Baker and you never look back. If you're looking at a pretty good cover corner at LSU with good lineage at a school with good size, good athleticism, and a little bit higher of a ceiling, you go after Greedy Williams. So it'll be interesting to see who's the top choice out of those two guys.
His long speed is going to come into question too. But the weird thing is, like, when you watch him on tape, he looks fast. Like, I've never looked at him and thought like he's sandbagging it or anything. And the funny thing is that was the biggest, one of the biggest knocks against Xavier Howard. His 40 time wasn't that good.
There was this guy that, you know, played really good corner, did everything right, came in at a not good size, didn't run a good 40. I think his name was Desmond King, and I think he's pretty good, though.
No, Desmond King is just absolutely cleaning up for the Chargers right now. And, you know, I mean, it's a cliche. I hate using this term with Iowa football players, but they're Iowa football players, especially on the defensive side of the ball, are typically smart guys. I mean, like, if you play defense at Iowa, I mean, you have a high football IQ. So you killed that pick, because, I mean, Desmond King is like, I mean, and he is in a very important part of, and imagine if that secondary were completely healthy, because like they've got Derwin back there now and that guy's just absolutely tearing it up. That's going to be an impressive, like, if they can go ahead and solidify a couple of things on that back end, that's a scary secondary going forward. People aren't here to listen to to talk about the Chargers, though. But so, I mean, we'll just get to the obvious one. Ohio State, Northwestern. I would love to see Northwestern win this game. I absolutely hate Ohio State. I apologize to anyone who's listening to this who's an Iowa or an Ohio State fan. I'm sorry it worked out that way for you. But here we are. Dwayne Haskins is pretty much, for a lot of guys, prospect number one, especially if they're looking for a quarterback. Has your opinion on this guy changed at all? I mean, you messaged me during the Michigan game on Saturday, which was close for a half and then turned into an absolute bloodbath. You were like, this guy is, I'm paraphrasing, but you said something to the effect of, he more and more is starting to look like the kind of guy that Miami can work with.
And it just also comes from the parallels of some of the things that Urban Meyer does and some of the things that Gase started to do this year, especially with a lot of those fly sweeps with the receivers and just a bunch of different things. And the type of receivers that he plays with at Ohio State never really has any of those big bodied red zone, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5" kind of guys. And, you know, they always kind of have those move tight ends too. So I think he's a guy that would make sense, at least just drawing visual parallels from what Ohio State has done offensively this year, that he's found 1 year of success with and what the Dolphins have done this year. Am I going to say that if they take a quarterback in the first round, he's the guy that they should take? I don't know about that. But, you know, I think at the right price, in the right scenario, he's a guy that I think they could be really interested in.
We'll go ahead and wrap this one up with I don't have a lot of interest in watching Clemson and Pitt. I think you're quite likely to see Clemson and Notre Dame go at it in either the Orange Bowl, or I saw that they might flip the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl, depending on if Oklahoma wins on Saturday and it's considered they have a home field advantage in the Cotton Bowl, they'd flip, and Oklahoma, and you have to assume Alabama, would go to the Orange Bowl, and then Notre Dame and Clemson would go and play in the Cotton.
I just feel bad for Georgia that they're essentially getting teased by being thrown into this number four slot this week. And it's just like, well, guys, if you don't beat Alabama, you're shit out of luck. Sorry. That's so bad.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of getting teed up here. Yeah. But I mean, this such is life, especially when it's been Bama and everyone else all year, which is too bad because, I mean, Notre Dame's had a great year. I mean, I saw some people claiming Notre Dame doesn't belong. I don't think that's fair. I mean, they ran the table. They beat down Michigan in the beginning of the year. Michigan, until last weekend, was considered a quality football team.
I'm going to be honest, though. So, if you told me based off of, I think it's just tough because Notre Dame's still independent and they're not in a real conference where it's like, look, you have to play these people every year. While there are certain perennial people that they play every year, Stanford, USC, Michigan's now back on the table again. They usually play Michigan State most years and stuff like that. You know, it's tough to sell that, especially when all the hate that UCF has gotten, like, okay, UCF hasn't played a ton of powerhouses either, but like, you know, what's considered fair and on the table for everyone? You know, I think that's the bigger issue when it comes to Notre Dame's season this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're at home this week. I mean, they don't have to do anything. I mean, whereas you got all these teams that at least have to, you know, they have to win their conference outright to get where they want to go.
Ohio State versus Notre Dame for the Big Ten championship instead. That changes life drastically for 4 to 7 teams.
Right. Instead, I mean, Notre Dame is locked into that 3 spot unless something really messed up, unless Clemson somehow loses or Alabama loses.
They don't,
you know, so
go into a worse. Yeah, worst case scenario is they stay still. You know, in a crazy scenario where Georgia beats Bama, essentially you see Clemson go to 1, Bama go to 2, Notre Dame still hangs at 3, and you know, Georgia goes to 3 and Notre Dame goes to 4. But that they're still playing Clemson, so at the end of the day, or no, they play Bama at that point. So that'd be probably worst case scenario for them.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll just keep this one short. With Clemson, though, we just laugh at how good this defensive line has been. Who is your favorite guy on this defensive line in terms of someone the Dolphins could use next season? Because, I mean, all 4 guys could be first-round picks.
I think the only guy that I'm not super interested in is Clelin Ferrell. I don't think he's bad. I think he's a little overhyped. You know, at one point I had him in my top 5 too, just because like I didn't know what I was gonna do with my top 100 either. But he's slid out. I don't even think he's top 10 anymore. But so I think he's good. I don't think he's great. I think if you're a team looking for a decent defensive end, you'll be able to get Austin Bryant at a better price. At least draft capital wise. But I think it's going to be another, like, what's your flavor when it comes to Lawrence and Christian Wilkins. I think Wilkins probably goes higher because his athleticism is crazier. And he gives you more flexibility and options where even though Lawrence is a really good athlete at the size that he is, he's still kind of in that mold of your Dontari Pose and guys in that, you know, Haloti Ngata kind of class. You're two gappers. I think you could probably play Lawrence anywhere from, you know, like a zero over the nose, you know, maybe even out to like an interior 4 kind of look in a wide 9. I think he'd be able to survive, you know, especially Miami's wide 9 front. But at the end of the day, I think most teams are going to look at him as like a real athletic nose tackle that you could still use on passing downs.
I'm a big fan of his game, so I'm interested to see if those guys can, you have to assume they're going to be in the playoff, see what happens with them. You got the young quarterback in there. I do think he's an upgrade over Kelly Bryant. I think Kelly Bryant was someone who became a hindrance for them in their game against Alabama last year, as opposed to what Deshaun Watson was able to do the year prior. Of course, losing that insane receiver group that they had didn't help. You think about what Mike Williams did to Alabama in that, that national championship game, in Tampa 2 years ago. So we'll go ahead and we're supposed to do a half hour. We're just under an hour now, so we'll fold this up. We could talk about college football forever. We might do that at some point. We mentioned this off air before the show, but we're going to do a sort of like bowl preview for the big games coming up as soon as they're decided. A lot of stuff gets finalized on Sunday after all the games are played on Saturday. So we'll have an idea of what's going on. We can sit there and talk about that at that time. So until then, for Zach, my name is Keith. Thanks for tuning in. This has been episode 7 of I Hate the Fins. We're on the Finsider Radio Podcast Network. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation. And I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.